this, that we should take another look at this. You know, it is very often true that in prophecy something interesting happens. But whereas one might have seen it from one perspective, one can look at it at a later time and see it from another. A number of brethren over the years have drawn our attention to the possibility that we should see in Daniel chapter 7 not merely a historic perspective of revival and a power that uprooted long ago, a religious power that uprooted three kingdoms that restored Rome in the West. It's very possible that we might see, when all is said and done, not only a historic event over many centuries, but a future event, because there may be not only 10 revivals through history, but 10 parts to a last revival. There may not only have been a horn that eradicated 3 of 10 successive revivals, but there may be a final aspect of the horn that uproots 3 out of 10 units in a realm that is yet to be finalized. We have that to see. There are 10 horns and 3 kings are to be. So we'll pose the question in terms of the future a little bit later. What we want to do now is take note that at this point, Daniel sees 10 toes, he sees 10 horns. First, when Mr. Armstrong studied it, whose thought of the 10 toes is equivalent to the 10 horns in terms of succession through history. Then he corrected the matter of the 10 toes. It is also possible that we should consider verse 24 in more than one light, more than a historic light, and see within it events in the future, because we have now a common market of 9, and we have Greece and Spain and Portugal knocking at the door. And how many shall there ultimately be, and how many of these kingdoms, democratic somewhat democratic, but I mean to say Catholic and Protestant, are going to remain in, will be the question. At this point, Denmark is a wholly Protestant country and seems incompatible. England and parts of Northern Ireland are connected with England, and Holland are, in fact, essentially divided religiously, as well as East Germany. And the others will be either Greek Orthodox or Roman Catholic. So we want to take a look to see whether indeed verse 24 of Daniel may not be dual. We'll now turn briefly to a small part of of Daniel chapter 8, just in passing. Here is a very strong emphasis on 2 animals, a goat and a ram. And they are defined in verse 20 and verse 21. The ram with 2 horns, the kings of Media and Persia. The rough goat, the first king of Greece, verse 21. So in Daniel's day, it was made clear to him. Now Daniel saw out of these events a certain crisis at the close. Now we don't want to go into this, we don't have time. But he sees a final king rising up, who is pictured as a leader. And then when you go through chapter 11, you are confronted again with the number of kings who are to stand up in Persia. And then you come to the king of Greece in verses 3 and 4, and its division. And there are many events all laid out here in Daniel 11, which Certainly, Daniel didn't understand when he first was looking at the prophecy of chapter 2. Daniel 11 fills in a great many details which pertain to the kingdom of God. I draw to your attention that in reading Daniel 11, many commentators have good understanding of it until they get to verse 33. And beginning with verse 33, a cloud descends over their thinking. And the reason, of course, is that those who keep the commandments have a good understanding. And we are told in verse 33 about those who have an understanding. Now, once you don't know that you're supposed to keep the commandments, you don't have an understanding and therefore can't figure out who do. And since the story pertains to those who have understanding, they are looking somewhere else and they're trying to look in the Jewish community. They're trying to look somewhere else and they have never seen that the story of the Church of God which keeps the commandments. And they're looking at some other institution that might be called a church. Verse 33, following the Maccabees, is the story of the Church of God, their history, even to the time of the end, verse 35, when a king will do according to his will. And there will be a struggle, and we have analyzed and made plain this is the story of the Middle Ages to modern times, and we haven't yet finished Daniel 11. World War II ended in the middle of verse 40. And verse 41, well, not just in the middle, but near the end of verse 40, he shall enter into the countries, and that's where it stops. And he shall overflow and pass over, did not find fulfillment, only in part. They entered into Egypt. They entered into Ethiopia. The armies wanted to move on to the Middle East, but they never were able to subdue those countries, and they did not overflow and pass over. They didn't enter into the holy, glorious land. So verse 41, in a sense, is yet to be repeated in the end of verse 40. And there may be other sections as a prelude that will have a background. I mentioned to you in the second subject on this series that Mr. Hogberg is pointing up such terms as the north and the south are used to describe the common market and the OPEC country. And that's a term that has taken root and certainly will have its parallel here. Now when we go to Revelation chapter 13, we will notice certain things quickly here. There is a beast and only one. You see, John is given a revelation. Daniel was given a revelation. But Daniel was living when the revelations began. He was living in the time of Babylon. And so he sees everything in the future. John is living in the time of the fourth beast. Beast was already subdued by Rome. So a revelation wouldn't have to go back into history and repeat what has already been there. It is rather an evaluation of a scripture that is to succeed in time. Here is an animal that had seven heads and ten horns. And upon his horns were ten crowns. Now, for the first time, we have the number seven. Now, in looking at Daniel, there were seven horns. After three were uprooted because there were ten in the first place. Mr. Armstrong, therefore, after much thought, drew the conclusion that the seven heads here represent the remaining three horns of Daniel chapter 7 after the first three were uprooted. And John is seeing ten horns of something well into the future. The implication being that the ten horns are on one of the heads, the last one, the second. We also draw the conclusion that it might be possible then to consider that these ten horns were like the ten toes of Daniel's shoes. And the seven heads were like the last seven of the ten horns of Daniel's seven. This was not immediately clear, but it was at least a possibility when Mr. Armstrong first studied it. You see, Daniel only saw horns, and he saw them in terms of the distant, distant future. And he saw a power that could uproot trees. Now, from that point of view, we can look back in time from the 20th century and indeed perceive a historic fulfillment. As John looks ahead, then he's concerned only with the seven that follow the uprooting of the street. Or let's say as God chose John, who is looking into the distance. But we want to be sure that this is the case. Now, the interesting thing is that the beast had characteristics of a leopard, and of a bear, and of a lion. And in the opposite order, the leopard was Greece, the bear was Media Persia, the lion was Babylon. So it would appear that this beast had, in fact, characteristics of what had preceded. It is the same kind of system, but in reality, it is Daniel's fourth beast. Now, when Daniel saw the fourth beast, he didn't see any heads on it. He only saw horns. Remember that. Daniel didn't see any horns. Any heads on the last beast. He only saw horns. And a horn was a symbol of power, of government, a ram's horn. That's right. Now, from this point, Mr. Armstrong perceived that seven heads are either a new introduction or a new way of explaining something that had already been made clear in Daniel. He drew the latter conclusion, that it is a way of stating what had already happened in Daniel. And ten horns then would represent the ten toes. And the feet, apart from the toes, would represent the seven heads of Revelation 13, verse 1, and would include the seven plus three horns of Daniel chapter 7. And as Mr. Armstrong saw the legs, then he saw the feet, and then he saw the toes. In chapter 7 of the book of Daniel, you only see the beast and ten horns, of which three were later uprooted. But here in Revelation, you see not only a beast, but seven horns and, seven heads and ten horns. So what he was trying to understand is that if you go by what is in the Bible, you don't start to interpret Revelation 13 by Revelation 17 because you haven't come to Revelation 17. You start with Daniel 2. You start then next with Daniel 7, and you move to Revelation 13, and you piece it together step by step, always putting a question mark wherever there may be a question in your mind. It's better to have a question than to assume you have an answer when it is not true. At least we note that this one animal seems to have the characteristics of what had preceded, and therefore it would be logical that this creature here represented the fourth beast, that Roman world. Now, that's one way to look at the story. I saw one of his heads, as it were, wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast. Now, this would bring up then another question of whether we are seeing this truly. Now, when we look at this, we might have Can we consider what we have evaluated from Revelation 13, verses 1 and 2? Let's go back then to another alternative, which I haven't mentioned. Remember, it pays to put a question mark. Mr. Armstrong didn't study all this with an immediate answer. Now, when we see Revelation 13, verse 3, then we come to the question of whether we should reconsider this. And the church has always taught something slightly different than what I first mentioned, and I wanted to go through this so you see what possibilities there are and what we may have to discard along the way as we were to study it. Now, in Daniel's 4B of chapter 7, you had a leopard, you had a bear, you had a lion, and you had a fourth one. This was not like any animal. On the lion was one head, on the bear was one head, and on the leopard were four, and on the last one was one head. And there are seven altogether in Daniel chapter 7. There are seven heads. So it's more likely at this stage that the seven heads, and as we look at this, that the seven heads of Revelation 13 are the same as Daniel's seven heads in chapter 7. And the ten horns are the same as Daniel's ten horns. Because we learn in verse 3 that one of its heads is wounded to death, and the deadly wound was healed. And all the world wondered after this beast, because the beast that might have died lived on. And it was given unto this beast to survive and to exercise significant power for 42 months, which we may interpret in more than one possible way, and the most likely is 1,260 years per thought. All right, what we now then draw the conclusion from is that it is more likely, when we look at history, that the head which was wounded to death in verse 3 is the head that was on Daniel's fourth boot, and not some successive head down in history, because the beast lived, the wound was healed. Now we have then another perspective, and we'll cross off the first possibility. And if you need to realize that Mr. Armstrong went through all this kind of thinking before he was able to perceive the story clearly. These seven heads here are better seen then as the same seven heads in Daniel, because, in fact, this one beast had all the characteristics of the other beasts in Daniel, and together, the four heads of the leopard, you see, show that there were four divisions of the primary in the Greek world. And those divisions then, added up with the other three animals, made seven. So, at this point, we would discern from Revelation 13 that we are starting out with a summation of Daniel chapter 7. With a summation of Daniel chapter 7, and we're now given a time element that the beast is going to survive over a period of time. 42 months or over 1,200 years, 1,260 years. John doesn't know when it begins, he doesn't know when it ends in time. It's all into the future. But it apparently happens after the seventh head is wounded, because it seems to follow. And therefore, we may draw the conclusion that the beast lived on in terms of the succeeding ten horns, two of which, Daniel said, were uprooted. So we now draw the conclusion from chapter 13 that we definitely must see these ten horns equivalent to Daniel chapter 7, 10, and the seven heads equivalent. But when we turn to Revelation 17, we're confronted again with an enigma. Here was a beast, and a woman was riding this beast, first time a woman is introduced. There was a strange horn introduced before. Now this beast had 7 heads and 10 horns. On the surface, one might immediately assume these are the original 7 heads of Daniel 7, the same 7 heads of Revelation 13. But no woman ever rode Babylon or Medo-Persia or Greece. One was the symbol of the church. Therefore, we are now for the first time confronted with the possibility that we found didn't seem to pan out for Revelation 13. Is it possible that these 7 heads and 10 horns are not the same 7 heads and 10 horns of Revelation 13, but rather that these 7 heads are the last 7 horns of Daniel, and therefore the last 7 horns of Revelation 13? And Mr. Armstrong came to the conclusion in looking through history and the biblical account that yet follows in this chapter that this was the logical deduction. The 7 horns, sorry, let me correct that, the 10 horns after the beast is pictured in Daniel chapter 7 are not 10 divisions, because Rome, though sometimes divided into one and another number, has never had consistently 10. There have been more, there have been fewer. Sometimes there might have been 10, but there's no consistency in it. But he noted here that a woman rides 7, not 10, and it is logical, since the horn is a power with a man's eyes, and it involves itself in blasphemy. Well, this horn would seem to have uprooted 3 and then likely dominated 7 horns that followed. In the same way, we draw the conclusion that this woman who sits on 7 heads and 10 horns of this beast, that these 7 heads would represent the remaining horns of Daniel chapter 7 in the last 7 of the 10 of Revelation 13. Now we look a little further. The beast that you saw was and is not and shall ascend out of an abyss, verse 8, and go into perdition. And this looks like the final revival. And if we have a final revival, if the beast was and is not and shall ascend, then we learn from this verse here in particular, verse 8, that we should see the history of Rome not in divisions like the Seventh-day Adventists do, but in a succession of revivals, where the Roman Empire is revived, and this is the last one. Those who dwell on the earth are going to wonder, as I pointed up, because indeed, this beast is going to surprise everybody when it occurs. When they behold the beast that was and is not and shall ascend. That's a better translation than the word yet is. Here is the mind which has wisdom. The 7 heads are 7 mountains. Mountains are symbols of government on which the woman sits. Now, symbolically, there is a city situated on 7 mountains. But there is also a church that sat on 7 governments. And interestingly, the headquarters of the church is within the confines of the city that's on 7 hills. Now, for those of you who have a little knowledge of geography, I'll let you interpret it. Now we are told there are 7 kings. Kings or kingdoms? Daniel learned that 4 kings doesn't mean just four kings only, but four kingdoms, and you may include four dynasties. That's the usage of the term. Now, when Revelation 17 is looked at, he has a strange addition here that five are fallen, and one is, and the other is yet to come. Sorry, is not yet come. Now, on this basis, without any question, Revelation 17, verse 10, is seen clearly to indicate a succession. Five are fallen, one is, and one hasn't yet come at a certain time sequence. What is important for this is that we don't see all seven at once. And from this we may draw the conclusion that Daniel's ten horns are in fact successive. In Revelation chapter 13, the ten horns are successive, and they are represented by the seven heads. And when John looks on the time and the judgment is about to occur, five of the seven are gone. One is, and only one is yet to come. And when he comes, he must continue a short space. Now, the knowledge of this verse 10 occurred, if you please, during the 1930s and 1940s. Peter Armstrong then wondered if Mussolini, which he regarded as the sixth, having studied history and the revivals of Rome, he wondered if Hitler was the seventh. And there are men who have left and said, well, Mr. Armstrong's a false prophet because he posed that question whether it was so. And if Hitler could have pulled off the development of the hydrogen bomb as he was pulling off the development of the rocket, let me tell you, we wouldn't have merely had rockets, V2, falling in London. We would have had bombs falling on the East Coast. And there never would have been a VE Day and a VJ Day. It would have been a VA Day. But God stopped it. And I can remember listening to the broadcast in 1943 and 1944, 1946. It was about that time, I think, the broadcast wasn't even on in 45 where I could reach him. And Armstrong realized that if Hitler did not come up with an immediate solution, that he was to be regarded as, shall I say, a link with Mussolini and not a successor. Even though he rose to power a little later, Mussolini around 1921, Hitler 1933. And they became an axis, and one must understand history in terms of that term, axis. The Rome-Berlin axis. That's what it was called, the axis power. For those of you who lived through the period of that time, we have more and more who haven't. As it turns up, you know, when I see our children, all of them never heard of broadcasts about the Axis powers. They can only hear it in recordings. That's how time goes by. Now, it wasn't easy to put all this together, but Mr. Armstrong, after trying first one thing and another, realized that Revelation 17 was going to picture the judgment of this great woman. And the judgment of the great woman comes on her as a result of the fact that she finally links up with the last power that shall be. And that power, and this woman, and fallen church, accomplished something that should never have been done, for which they're going to receive the judgment of God. So that Revelation 17 is not talking about five Roman emperors who have deceased, one that is, who's Nero, and one who's yet to come. That's the way some people have tried to explain it. And in fact, every evidence is that John received the revelation in the mid-90s A.D. after nine emperors and more. Well, after nine major emperors and a lot of them who came on the throne suddenly in the early 69 A.D. period. Had long since gone. Some have tried to take verse 10 as a proof that John wrote in the days of Nero. when the universal tradition of the Greek church is quite contrary to this. We're not dealing with the emperors of Rome and the fact that the prophecy failed, that one more was to come and it would all end. We're dealing instead with seven kingdoms over which a church was to rule, and this fallen church had never yet been sitting on one in John's day, so they don't have the least understanding of who this woman is. Or they would know that this is not Roman emperors, as you can read in a lot of modernistic commentaries. There are seven kings, five are fallen, one is yet to come, implies that the knowledge of the judgment to the church of God and making it known to the world should begin to occur when a beast is in the form of the sixth head. And when the seventh comes, it will continue but a little space. Now, this strange beast is, in fact, an eight, as it says in verse 11. The beast that was and is not is an eight, and that mystery is peculiar because it says it is of the seven. Now, when we note that this beast is a single creature and is of the seven, the implication is that John and Daniel previously never saw this beast as a beast. They saw it only as part of the seven that had been before. That is, it's part of the seven heads of Daniel 7, and it's part of the beast with the seven heads of Revelation 13. So what now turns out to be a separate beast really is a head, if you please, of Revelation 13, the last head. This beast, then, is of the seven heads. It, in fact, in a sense, is the seventh head after the deadly wound, because it is that head which has only seven horns left, which are now on this beast, seven heads. So you see, Daniel had a beast with 10 horns. Three were uprooted, then he had a beast with 7 horns, didn't he? We're not worried about the single one, which is symbolic of something else. That will pass by for the moment. So that when we go to Revelation 13, we have this whole composite 7th chapter of Daniel repeated. Only in this case, we don't have many beasts. We have one beast on which all the heads are assembled, and 10 horns. So when we come to Revelation 17, here is a woman riding, and this can only be after those 3 horns of Daniel 7 have been uprooted. So what we perceive is that this is yet another beast. But it is not an eighth beast, because there were only 4 beasts, remember, in Daniel. But it is an eighth. Well, what? It's an eighth system. Then it is of the seven. So let's take a look as we now draw this to a conclusion. There were 7 heads initially in Daniel's prophecy, which represented Babylon through the Roman Empire. And here we have now another beast, which in a sense is therefore of the seven. It's of the seven. That's important. So we know in a sense it is of the seven heads, the fourth beast of Daniel, which ended up in Revelation 13 devouring everything that had gone before. It's another beast. It is of the original 7 heads, but it is that 7th head only after 3 horns were uprooted from Daniel chapter 7. It is a beast that represents the times of the revival of the 7 horns of Daniel 7. Or the last seven of the horns of Revelation 13. Now, in this sense, it is pictured as a separate animal altogether. If you originally had seven heads and the last one was wounded, you see, and that wound was healed, this beast represents what happened after that healing. It is therefore like an eighth head, as if the seventh head were killed, the Roman Empire were killed. This is an eighth head, but it actually pertains to the seven heads that were originally revealed. But now he sees it only, you see, as the last page. That is, the closer you look toward the end of time, the more it is magnified. And we not only see a beast, that is the revival of the old Roman system when seven horns are left, but we see those original seven horns that were left now as seven heads or seven kings, of which five are fallen. One is when this prophecy came to be clear to the Church of God in this century, and one is yet to come, and there are ten horns now on this lamb head, which haven't even received power as yet, when the prophecy is revealed. In other words, when the one head that is on this beast exists, the ten kings haven't received their power, so ten are going to come up after the time the knowledge of this prophecy came to be clear to the church. And they shall receive power as kings for a brief period and give their strength to the beast which exists in the final form at the seventh head. Now from this we see the conclusion that the woman is punished by the horns which burn her with fire. That there is a conflict between truth and faith. And what I suggest you do, and what I want you to do, is not look at this as a quick summary of what we've had before, but a tackling of the problem much as if we started anew and looked at it and examined and threw out some ideas and retained others. You should go over the booklet, Who is the Beast, or an article that covered this, and even use supportive material from Mr. Paul Cole's work in 72 and 73. And analyze and see how the understanding was assembled. That is, you can go through one chapter and then another, and you can draw some ideas, like I did temporarily, that turn out not to be correct when you look a little further. And that's exactly what Mr. Armstrong faced when he went through it. And he came to realize that there were things in Daniel 2, and especially in Revelation 13 and 17, that would not be clear just by themselves. Possibilities that turn out not to be what was intended in the revelation to Daniel and John. From this, we draw the conclusion that we are looking for not an Islamic empire of 10 Arab nations, we are looking for a Roman system. We're looking for a Roman system that revives the Roman Empire, as Justinian did, as the Empire of Charlemagne did, as the German Empire, the Ottos and immediately succeeding dynasts did, as the Habsburg did, as Napoleon did, as Mussolini did with the aid of Hitler, and usually these men had in Western Europe a twofold division. And it shall happen again. Very likely a kind of twofold division in Europe, and I would assume it is the economically strong as iron and the economically weak as clay. Nations are going to get together, and there are 10 of them. And to what extent we may find a parallel, who knows? There may be a parallel in uprooting certain governments that are presently within a market situation, the common market, And we will look at this. We haven't yet drawn conclusions. We don't know. Europeans themselves don't know what is going to occur. But we will keep our ears and eyes open. And what is clearly coming is a continuity of the system of thinking that has been in France and Germany and Italy and Austria all these centuries. The thinking of, if you please, the European man who represents this poor thief. This is not a man of Persia. This is not a man of the Arab world. It's not a man of Greece. This is, in a sense, a Roman man in terms of the thinking of Europe. And if you have to draw that conclusion when you go through the whole. What will astound the world is, as I said before, that it occurs because there's no reason to think now that it could, if you were to look at world events. And that's what will make it all the more serious. The freeze, while we have the 4th of July coming up, and the 3rd, it would behoove you to go through the literature and to ask yourself that if you were to read each chapter, would you draw the same conclusion? If, as you go along, you draw different ones, as Mr. Armstrong initially did, then put a question mark by it, and you learn to study and see if indeed the total picture is not what the church has ultimately come to, insofar as we are at this point in time. And I think we won't have some of the theories that, you know, we can allow to lodge in our minds, or some of the ideas that have come from the outside. I think it is time now, at a point where it is commonly said throughout the Church of God that prophecy is steered clear of, because nobody wants to get his fingers burned. Let me tell you, we'd get our fingers burned if there were 10 Arabs over which a church would, 10 Arab nations, Muslim, over which a church, a Christian church, would reign. So I don't expect that, because that's not what's going to happen. What's going to happen is the continuity of a system which is centered in Europe. Because Europe, the North, is in conflict now economically with the Arab world, the South. And the Roman has always ridden the political structure of the North and not the South. And I think that picture is fundamental in terms of what men are doing. And it is time we got back to an understanding so that no ideas coming along will overthrow us. And at the same time, we keep open our minds to see how it is going to be worked out and whether any prophecies may even have a duality that we now don't even perceive. So I alluded to a possibility that some of the brethren have brought to my attention over the years from Daniel chapter 7. Uprooting of certain Protestant faiths within a common market framework. I think we should take note of that. Are some going to be put out? Out of 10, are 3 going to be removed, and are other 3 going to replace them so that you may have out of 10, 3 uprooted, and in the end, 10 in all? You know, these are questions of which the church is looking and watching and hasn't spoken definitively yet. But I think we should look, because President Carter admits that this year will be a turning point in terms of the Middle East, where the crisis will ultimately focus. And if we cannot get the Jews, the Israelis, and the Arabs to each relinquish the unrelinquishable thing, then he said the world has had it.